Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and this is a magical moment. I'm in studio with looking eyeball to eyeball to master facilitators who I met. Big shout out to BS and Beer, Robbie Schwartz, who is facilitating that at Tradecraft, where they were some of the guests in the audience, where they were there, where they had just signed up, I believe, to come into Tradecraft at the time. And I always talk about some of the days can be long, but the years are short, how we weave the art of construction and the people who make it work in the art of construction all come together. And today I'm honored to be in studio with a father and son combo who own an LLC, Scott Sipnewski, Jr. and Sr. It's a mouthful if you say all that over and over again. So we went down this Scott's to Jr., Sr. So you're going to hear Jr. and Sr., both named Scott, and they own and operate a really cool Riches in the Niches business, building trust and working with a great quality platform called SSLLC Plumbing. And we're going to unpack that. And the main message, Tribe, that I want you to hear today is that how can we flourish as sub-specialty subcontractors as we're going on this deep dive journey around system-built construction of all of the doers that make the parts of construction become a whole? And why I was so excited after I got done doing this live podcast, and we'll put links to the show notes with the whole deep dive series we did with Robbie Schwartz. Got done doing it, and they're going to get to go through this experience with me today. And one of the magical things about doing a podcast is you like do all this thought and all this pre-planning, and you're like so worried about what you're going to say and how you're going to say it. And then you go through this conversation, and it's kind of like, what did I say? And I've probably 100 times are like, I should have said this or that. And I'm like, just wait till you listen back. And the whole idea why I'm saying that is because I challenged Robbie and team, is like, let's do something different. And we did this live podcast, and I was having some audio issues that you guys probably didn't notice. And I was like doing all this stuff behind the scenes, and we had guests come up and talk. And big shout out to Chloe and my editing team. I listened back to it, and it was great. No issues. All came out great. But my favorite part about that night was after it, Scott and Scott came up to me, and they're just like, man, I love that. We're a plumber, and we just really want to grow our business, and we want to be on the podcast. And I was like, cool. By the way, P.S., I get all kinds of people reaching out. I'm this one thing, and I sell this. I want to be on the podcast. I said, great. Go listen to the podcast. But then they did something special that we're going to unpack on this podcast. As they said, we've been on this journey of really figuring out who we are, and that's why we're here today. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is that how they did that is by defining their core values and actually took time to go work on the business that I always talk about on this podcast. But the riches are in the niches, and in construction, the people who actually make it work, the heroes, the warriors, the people of construction are the specialty subcontractors, and they live it by doing plumbing every day. And I'm going to start by reading their defined core values, and then we're going to get to know Scott Sr. and Scott Jr. and have as much fun as possible. What do you think, guys?
Awesome.
All right. Our core values. Number one, teamwork. We put our team's needs before our own. I felt that when I met them initially. You only have one chance to make a first impression. I felt that immediately when I met them. Lead. We lead ourselves first. They're here doing it on the podcast. The first plumber I've had in almost 350 podcasts. They're humble. We build strong relationships. Go look at their website. The proof is in the pudding. It's actually lifelong learners stepping up and training and educating inward and also outward like they're doing here today and taking ownership. And that word ownership, we're going to unpack because we take ownership of everything. The good, and most importantly, the bad. It's not if, it's when there's an issue, and it's how you take care of it to keep those partnerships in this industry. So let's dive in and get to know the Scotts. We're going to start with senior and then junior. You'll hear a little bit deeper voice with senior, and then when junior talks back. So you'll get to hear their voices, and here we go. You guys ready to have as much fun as possible?
Yes, sir.
All right. Senior, what's your favorite beverage?
Mineral water.
Mineral water. All right. Certain one?
Like Topo Chico.
There you go. All right. Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
We love a small little town about 2 hours north of Cabo San Lucas called Los Barriles. It's a small fishing town that John Wayne and Bing Crosby used to go to, and it's just a great place to go.
Give me one story from there.
One story. Well, the first time we were there was about 2004. These guys were, we had our family down there, and there was another couple that had a little one-year-old running around the restaurant, and that guy has become a really good friend of mine. He's a real estate agent from Hood River, and just have really met a lot of great people down in this small little town. So again, it's all about relationships.
I love it, senior. You're the ultimate networker. Every time we talk, I love it. What is a favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos we're going to talk about breaking down that we passionately call the art of construction?
So we have about 35 acres off the grid up south of Fairplay with a small cabin. So my wife and I just love going up there and being in the middle of nowhere and hiking and skiing and just getting away from the city.
Well, I couldn't agree more. We have a retreat center down in Westcliff, so we're not far from you there. So we'll have to definitely exchange information as we niche in and get to know each other through the Global Megaphone. Junior, honor to have you here as well. Same questions for you. What's your favorite beverage?
Sweet tea. Chick-fil-A's best sweet tea out there.
It's funny. I was going to say, is it the Chick-fil-A one? Because it's funny how people on their different beverages. I like to dig a little deeper because it's always they'll say one thing of, you know, beer or tea or this. And when you start unpacking, it's like unless I had one person that was like fountain soda and went in this long thing about it has to be this way and this way. And you get to know how their mind works a little bit, right? Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
Yeah, for me, it was actually recently last year in August. My wife, my best friend, and his girlfriend, we went to Scotland and Ireland for 9 days. So got to drive around on the other side of the road through Ireland, saw some great scenic views of the Cliffs of Moher and Dublin, and then spent some time over in Edinburgh, Scotland, looking at all the architecture, and was able to do some golf over there as well. So it was a beautiful place.
Awesome. Good stuff. And what do you like to do outside of construction?
Golf, golf, golf.
All right, buddy. Well, you like to go to Fairplay. I have the place in Westcliff, and at my place in Westcliff, I built this makeshift 9-hole golf course over there in the studio. There's pictures of it over there. So we can definitely tie all this stuff together as we get to know each other. Let's start with senior, then junior. Scott, what is your story that led you to being the founder and CEO of SSLLC Plumbing?
So we're originally from Chicago, and I grew up, my dad was a plumbing contractor, and I became a plumbing contractor myself in 2000. We ran a business for 18 years, raised our family, but it was really small, just one or two employees. And in 2018, we just decided that we needed a change and decided to move to Denver and took a job working in multifamily construction. So my wife and I moved out. She took a job, and we just started our path as empty nesters and worked for a few different people. And then in July of 21, got the opportunity to go into business. And I never felt that I had the ability to run a big business, but I had read a leadership book. And I said, if I just focused in on these principles, I think I could do this. So in August 1st of 21, we incorporated. By November of that year, we had all 300 plus unit apartment projects in the Springs and no employees. And so we just started to put a team together, focusing in on leadership principles. And thinking back, the one thing we spent a lot of time, you talked about our core values, was what was our mission statement? What were we going to do this time around? And so our mission statement is that we're a plumbing contractor that focuses in on building relationships for the success of our team, our customers and our vendors. And that's one thing that has been consistent. And that's our story, is that we focus on the success of others. And it really has gotten us to where we're at. And that's our culture. And so now we're 2.5 years into it. We have a staff of about 21 people in our office. We run about 48 plumbers. And every one of our customers that we started with are interested for us to do their next work. And so that's what, you know, that's success for me, is building those relationships and getting repeat business and building this pipeline of work and taking care of the families that we've hired to be part of this. So it's been extremely humbling, but it's just, you know, the leadership principles and just what it's done for not only the SSLLC, but my marriage, being a father, a husband, a friend. It's just, my life is entirely different in the last 2.5 years. And really what I realized was I had to become a better me. And so I make two guarantees to everybody that comes aboard our company. The first guarantee is that I will work every day to be a better leader. And the second guarantee is I'll provide that environment for everybody that comes aboard.
Thank you so much for leading in with that. And the fact that you're sitting here on the global megaphone with your son next to you, because you can say those things, but then the person who you're passing the baton to is here to back that up. So this is a great journey that I'm super excited to go on. Pass the baton over to you, Junior. What is your story that led you to being the COO for SSLLC Plumbing?
Yeah, for me, you know, I saw the business from the outside for those 18 years, you know, and watched him move to Colorado. And, you know, I went to college, got my undergrad, did my master's, moved back to Chicago. And, you know, he started the business in 21, and, you know, we stayed in contact every week. You know, he kept filling me in on things that they were dealing with and issues and work that they were getting. So I saw the business from the outside for that first year. And I had gotten to the point in my career where I was really looking for more. And I was fighting complacency really hard at my job of, you know, I was doing the same thing every day. I was in phone sales, working for a high school sports recruiting company. And, you know, through this leadership book, the leadership principles, you know, I saw a huge change that he had made, you know, from finding this book and starting the company and the philosophy that they had going into this. So that was July of 21, where they approached me with an opportunity to come join and help run their business. And, you know, I think I thought about it for about 4 months, you know, really deciding, do I want to go work for my parents? Do I want to help them start this? And, you know, ultimately it came down to the challenge that I wanted to take on of being able to grow something from the beginning, the way that they did it. Cause I saw some of the struggles that they had for those 18 years and saw the success that they were having from the start of focusing so much on the culture and the people that they're bringing in and taking care of those around them, which makes everyone else successful. So I joined in September of 21, and, you know, it's been a learning experience for me. I don't have a background in plumbing, but I came here to help lead this company in the direction that we want to go 5-10 years down the road. You know, so it's been an incredible learning experience for me to understand construction, understand plumbing, understand the nuances of running a business, and, you know, what goes in from a financial end, from a planning side, from a strategic planning aspect.
Awesome. And we're going to go down to a journey and have some different questions. But first, I want to just kind of get your guys' perspectives for the rest of the master facilitators out there, and start off by giving a shout out to Sean Poor, AOC Show 320, titling Penciling Projects with Full Volume Metrics. And he was another person that was in the audience at this live podcast that Robbie Schwartz and I were doing at Tradecraft, where Bryce Blue and you guys now office out of there, right? And so we were doing the live recordings, and that's where I met you. And at the intro, I kind of talked about my perspectives of fueling my passion when you guys came up to talk to me after, and talked about your compelling story. Can you guys talk about your compelling story and also about, you know, relationships earned, not giving? And we both live day to day as me in a window specialty subcontractor, you guys as plumbing, with the challenges and the who and the what of full volumetric projects and penciling those to make them happen. What's your take to all of that?
You know, it's interesting looking at Sean's picture. You know, I met Sean, I think it was around November of 22. And actually, he had shared something on LinkedIn about that podcast with that we were at with you. And that's why I was there, because of Sean. And so we had worked together the beginning of 23 to do a project together. And then just with interest rates, it ended up not penciling. And we just really maintained a relationship. And, you know, it's a different story when you're in this for the long haul. And, you know, you're really focused in on building relationships. So it's, hey, you be patient. And for us, I asked somebody this question and it just really resonated with me, was his answer. And I said, where do you like to work? He said, it doesn't matter. It's who I want to work for. And as I heard that, that's really what we focus on, is who we want to work for. We have a vetting process of 10 characteristics that we kind of predetermine who we want to work for. Because what if we get 5 projects and we could only do 3? How are we going to determine who we're going to work for? And so we've predetermined the people that we want to work for. And really, it's do our cultures align? Do we see it the same way? You know, and our 3 uniques in our business are, is we prioritize relationships, we own your schedule, and we take ownership of everything. And so, surprisingly, there's people out there that really don't prioritize schedules. And when they tell you that the job is going to take 18 months and it goes to 24 months, there's a cost involved in that. Yeah, and a cost most times you can't recoup.
I laugh because I met with Sean yesterday just to get like where his head is currently, because every one of these podcasts are kind of these moments in times, right? And it's a lot of moments in times kind of etched together of like how business actually works, right? And earning relationships. And you can burn it overnight too by making the wrong step. And that's what's really hard about business, right? Especially if you're a passion guy, like if you looked at the 10 things for Devin, it'd be different than other employee A, B, and C. But above that is this company. That's why the culture thing is so important, right? And defining those 3 uniques so that are the right people rowing in the boat together. So I totally agree with your perspectives on that. And Sean is one of those guys that's newer to Colorado, but he's done a great job of getting around and getting involved in connecting the who and the what. Like you say, you were at Tradecraft because of Sean. You ended up getting an office there and all these stuff tying together to where Art of Construction is one of those guides to help you with those 3 uniques, right?
Sure. And, you know, I think what's missed is it all starts with the leader, and he has to set the example. And getting to know Sean, you know, as I talk to different members of his team during scope reviews, and it's like they're all a reflection of who Sean is, and it's the example that we set. And so that's really, as we've started SSLLC, it's I had to be the example of leadership because that's all I could control. And then as I brought people into this, I can't say, well, you know, you can't yell at that guy as I'm yelling at him. I got to be the example of of being calm and cool and just, you know, practicing those core values, practicing the leadership skills that we've been given. That's all I can control.
And I sure appreciate you saying that, because like, what are the rules of the great game of business? You have to define those as the leader, and then you got to lead by example, right? Anything you'd add to that, Junior?
Yeah, I think from my perspective, you know, it's one thing for, you know, if you look at an organizational chart, you got the top people that are prioritizing relationships. But I think what's benefited us the most is how that message has been passed down to the 18, 19 other people that are within our team. You know, if you go out to any of our job sites and you ask them what's the most important part of running a job, it's the relationships. You know, and it's one thing for us to talk about it, but for then our guys who are running the projects to be, you know, communicating daily with the general contractor, to be communicating daily with the other trades, you know, relationships is everything that we do. You know, we talk a lot about leadership capital. You know, you're either depositing into that bank that you have, or you're withdrawing leadership capital. You know, so if you go into a conversation, you know, trying to figure out how can I benefit from this or how can this person benefit from this interaction, you know, you're going to be steered towards the right direction instead of focusing more on yourself. You know, it's always how can I help? How can I support this person? So it's just building a culture of relationships, you know, and that's being felt from everyone all the way down to our, you know, employee number 20.
So employees, let's talk about that, Junior. Hiring and training is always top of mind when it comes to specialty subcontractors. What is your take on that?
Yeah, for us, you know, we've always obviously had trials and tribulations as we've started this company. And, you know, we've approached hiring from a whole different mindset, I think, the last 6 months. You know, and our biggest focal point has been how can we take emotion out of the hiring process? You know, and a lot of we've had some hires that have come in that have just been hired by one person. You know, that person had a great conversation. They really loved what they were doing. And then that person was hired. And 6 months, 7 months down the road, it doesn't work out because there was a lot of emotion that was tied into that person being hired. So we've scaled everything back.
Yeah, I have to chime in there because that's where I own a business myself. And we've, like, Devin cannot hire anybody from Mountain View anymore. Because in the past, I'm a very emotional guy, and I would get connected, and I'd do it, and I'd put it into the rest of the team. They'd be like, they just want to work for you, Devin. But they don't actually work for you because you've set up a company culture to where the system is to not go ask Devin. And if that's the system, then you can't go hire these people. And that, it sounds very obvious, but the first system we had was go ask Devin. So it was me letting go of the vine, but then making sure I'm leading by example to say, you have to pass the baton. And now we do anybody we hire for a distinct role, we have to do what we call the fonds in our whole leadership team. And everybody has to look each other and do the double thumbs up. And before they do the double thumbs up, they've asked all the questions. That's how we do it to take the emotion out of it. I saw when Junior was talking there, and this is audio only, but I saw Senior kind of in the corner, kind of like, yeah, that's me. And he's trying to be humble. And I'm just calling a spade. Am I fair on that?
Yeah, so we took this very similar approach. I mean, we have four stages of an interview process, four rounds that a potential employee goes through. And the fifth stage is actually talking to Senior, because at that point, if they've gone through four rounds and that person's a fit, it's not about him making the decision, because everyone else who's met with them are the ones that they're dealing with directly on the day-to-day.
But it is still important that they meet with Senior, because he still is the culture and the leader, the face of the organization. So all that stuff is, I commend you for doing all that stuff. And if you're a warrior listening to this to say, how should I go start my own company or work for others, that's not the point of this conversation. It's making sure you're working with people who actually have a defined core value, and actually do you align with them? Because I think a lot of people might look at it and be like, I just got to get a job. I don't have time to go through four interviews. And I'm like, well, you got to look yourself in the mirror and say, this is just as much for you as it is for SSLLC, because it's the right person in the right seat. It's finding those right matchmaking, because you see a lot of happy marriages and you see a lot of non-happy marriages. And sometimes they're happy, they're not happy here, and they're happy over there, right? But once you go into partnerships, you've done it, right? So then unwinding it. So I think it's really important to take that time of the old slogan of hire slow, fire fast. But that's hard to do in our industry, that there's the resources are limited.
Right, and because our culture is so strong, we know that, you know, the first round of an interview someone has is determining if they are a fit for our culture. Because if they're not, you know, why would they go into the second round of interviews where they're meeting with, you know, maybe someone that directly deals with their position, you know? So it's figuring out if they're a fit for our company, our culture, our team, and taking the emotion side out of it. We predetermine every question that we need to ask. And you look at our four core values, you know, we hire, we train, we promote, we reward, and we fire off of those. So all the questions that we ask are all tied to the four core values. We're not specifically asking, how do you lead yourself? We're phrasing it in a way that they can give an example of a situation that they had an opportunity to lead themselves, to see what kind of character, what kind of person does that actually bring out.
Part of that rounds of interview is we've brought on a leadership coach in our company, an outside entity or an outside person. And so he actually meets with every member of our team on a monthly basis. And it's pretty, he's really detached. He lives in Kansas, and he's just really a leadership coach, whatever they're dealing with. I believe that if people become better versions of themselves, you don't have to manage them. So he's part of the actual interview process. So he's the fourth round. So they have a 45-minute to an hour conversation. His name's Marcus Aurelius Anderson. And he truly, I mean, he just loves what we're doing. He believes in our mission and our principles. And so he's a detached person that knows what we're looking for, has a conversation with them. And he also gives us a thumbs up or thumbs down. And so it's just, sometimes we may be emotional or just we really love a guy. We need that outside perspective to say, hey, are we missing something here? So it's really worked wonders since we started this. So,
Senior, when we were getting to know each other, you were talking about the 80-80 principles. Can you expand a little bit about that?
Sure. So we follow an entrepreneurial operating system called EOS, and part of that process is to develop a 10-year goal. And so we had developed the...
Are you sure it's not the 80-20?
It's kind of, but that's the 80-20. But this is, the 10-year goal was, we had to come up with a 10-year goal. And at the time, our 10-year goal was...
I'm a big EOS guy, and I'm thinking, maybe am I mixing something?
No, it is 80-20, but this is something different.
Okay, because I want to make sure, I'm a huge fan of the Entrepreneur Operating System. It really helped me break through the ceiling of how to run a meeting and accountability charts and all the things I got out of that. And I just want to make sure that we're articulating the same thing. You guys have your own spin on it.
Our 10-year goal at that time, which was about a year ago, was we had this crazy idea that we would plumb 100,000 units in 10 years, which was just, I mean, when you do the math, it's just crazy. So I thought about that. I said it to a couple people outside of our company, and one person, actually one of the authors of that leadership book, he said, is that really the company you want to have in 10 years to have said you plumbed 100,000 units? And I'm like, wow. So I started thinking about that. And so as we started with our EOS meetings, I brought this up and I said, I don't feel comfortable with that being our 10-year goal. I said, what if our 10-year goal was in 10 years, we're still dealing with 80% of the customers and we're still retaining 80% of our team. So that's where the 80-80 came in, is we're just focusing in on the 80-80 to say, for us to be a success, that we're dealing with 80% of the customers and 80% of our team. And really, whether that happens or not, every decision we make is to think about that 10-year goal, to say, is this getting us closer? Are we doing the things, building relationships with our team and our customers to be dealing with them in 10 years, to be retaining them for us to be hiring them?
And I have to chime in there because I really appreciate you expounding on, that's actually one of the really hard things when you go on the EOS journey, is so few people want to be leaders, and so few of those leaders can even want to think and articulate 10 years from now. But that's actually why you're doing this whole thing in the first place. And for me, the first time, it was at the time we were like, I think we were $6 million in revenue, and it was like 20, I don't know. So it was my 10-year, when I started, my 10-year was going to be $25 million in revenue by the year 2025. And the thing I want to articulate here is that these numbers are jaded. Like, the 10-year target could be 3, 5, 7 years. It's just these benchmarks to start the conversation. I think people get very jaded about bracketing what this numbers and these things mean. And the whole idea is that, like, you have to, like, think, cast that big net. Your big, hairy, audacious goal is another, the BHAG, all these different things. But as a leader, you have to be humble enough to say, like, I threw that out there, and then I got good coaching to me as a leader to say, yeah, that's not really what I want to be at the end of this in 10 years. For me, it was not smart, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, timely. That's the EOS, like, you get hammered in your head when you're going through the coaching process. It was, but at this revenue, but at this, and you have to have these big casting nets to where you actually have to make it all work. So that's how you took what you're really passionate about and made it something that you, but I love how you're kind of tying it back into the overall process. That's what I heard.
And it's really a mindset than a goal written on a piece of paper saying we're going to focus just on that goal. It's the mindset of how we approach our day, how we lead our people. Like, is this going to help us retain our employees? Is building that relationship, is doing the right thing for the right reason, is that going to help solidify that relationship with that customer?
The next kind of topic I want to talk through is really expanding around culture. And I want to tee this up by saying you guys have said culture over and over again, and I'm a culture guy as well. But I'm the first to also say on the mic, culture is not easy. It's an everyday, all the time. You got to call yourself out and call others out and really guide yourself and others over and over again. And in this industry, I work really hard to not burn any bridges, and that's where I'm honored at closing in on 350 of these episodes, and I'm proud of every one of those. And that's hard to do in construction because I always say don't burn any bridges, but sometimes it's, you just got to close some of the chapters, right? And that's just how it is sometimes. But as we were going down this journey, I've had multiple people, and that's why I want to talk about this, is that I had never heard of CCO, and I had a shout out to one of my previous CFOs. His name's Kyle Covell. We're actually having dinner with his daughter tonight, now that I think about that. And I was talking with him about, hey, I'm kind of struggling with this and what this title. He's like, maybe you should make that a CCO. I'm like, what's a CCO? He's like, well, it's a chief culture officer. And I'm like, Kyle, you were the guy back when you were in my EOS team, like you'd always be the guy fighting about culture. He's like, he has two daughters now, and he's a different. It's just fascinating how that guy was telling me, the passion guy, of you should maybe like lean more into culture. And at the same time, I was prepping for this interview, and you guys were talking about how you're really leader of this person, of the journey of business. And I was asking you guys who that person is, and we went on this conversation around the stages of entrepreneurship. Like, you guys have kind of teed this up now of like you needed a life change to come to Colorado. Two people started it. Well, you go get deals sold. That's the first thing you said, right? You went out and sold deals and said, I'm going to be the leader. But then you got to have somebody manage the deals, right? And then it starts with the money, right? Because money talks and bullshit walks, and you better manage it. So you go to the CEO, to the CFO, to then typically it's the COO, right? Junior, the operations person. But tell me the story, Junior, if I heard correctly, you have a chief cultural officer. Who that is, why that is, and expound on that.
Yeah, so I think I'll start with how it came about. I think it was maybe in December of last year, maybe November. I think he had saw a LinkedIn article or was looking around of this role, CCO, chief culture officer. And, you know, within our culture, you know, everyone has a hand in building that culture. And with senior taking care of 80% of the team or 80% of the customers that we want to deal with, we really realized that there wasn't a dedicated person taking care of 80% of the team, you know, because you can have everyone doing one thing, but is anyone ever doing what they really need to be doing? So he came to me, we had a conversation over the phone. We were talking about, hey, like, what do you think about having a chief culture officer? And do you know who that could be? And I think I sat there, I'm like, I have no idea who this could be. Who has seen our company from the start, watched us grow, bought into these principles of leadership, and been there every step of the way. And so I slept on it. I think we had another phone call the next morning. And then I get a phone call from my mom, who at the time was our CFO. And she called me and, you know, we were kind of debriefing a little bit of the conversations he had with her and I had with him. And she was just like, I really want to do this. I'm like, you want to do this? And immediately I thought the one person that is the best person to do this who has been here from the start is my mom, Kathleen. You know, so it really has given her a whole new purpose of being able to fully support and fully be there for every member of our team. And I think another thing that added to that was, you know, we brought in a great lady, Christine, who was underneath my mom in the CFO role of assisting with the finances. And she kept asking for more responsibility. She kept wanting to step up and fully take on the entire financial role. And because of her doing that, it allowed my mom to want to take into this role and really be the chief culture officer for SSLLC and be the one that is the go-to person for our entire team. So yeah, we all have a role in help in facilitating our culture, but now we have a dedicated person that Monday through Friday, Saturday and Sunday, this is what she thinks about, how she can support, how she can train, how she can continue to cultivate the culture that we have.
Gold. I'm super proud to hear you say like that about your mom. Like, that's cool stuff, man.
And it was just a different mindset. I mean, it was just like a light bulb went off in her head. You know, she had always been doing the finances from the 18 years in Chicago, helping with the books, running that business, moving out to Colorado. It was just, hey, you've always done the finances. Like, this is what you know. You're good at numbers. Let's keep going that. But I know she was really looking for more. And, you know, timing plays out into everything. And I think if we maybe rushed into this a year ago, maybe it wouldn't have been right. And the timing was just perfect. We did some research. We had a lot of talks about it. And, you know, this is something she's put together a plan. She's fully outlined her roles and responsibilities. The team now understands her roles and responsibilities. And, you know, there's just that one person now that's dedicated to managing our culture.
And that the undertone of that is another shout out to EOS, is they always talk about delegate and then elevate. And you were able to do that when you talked about maybe turning someone from into like a controller role to a CFO role, of like, relationships are earned and given. And again, money talks and bullshit walks. So who's helping managing the checkbook? They kind of have to know all those different moving parts and have to be able to tie that back to the culture and the core values and all that stuff. So I genuinely appreciate you all sharing these stories to put the how we got here to it. But the punchline of this whole thing as we work towards closing this out is I'm super excited to listen to this, because our team, it was one of our books of our, we do three books a year, and this was one of our books last year, and then there's a follow-up book that we did again after that. And I'll leave it to you, Senior, by starting, when you and I were really getting to know each other, you just made the comment, it all started by reading a book.
It was about June, right around Father's Day. I had a kind of a dark moment in my personal life and just needed to make some corrections. I was just working for somebody, wasn't a very good situation, and just was searching for some answers for myself personally. And so I was on the internet, and I found a TED Talk by Jocko, and the concept of extreme ownership was just like, I needed to take ownership of my life. And so I bought the book and I read the book, and then that was June. So then all of a sudden, a month later, I'm getting this opportunity to start my business. And I'm like, this has just been handed to me. If I just for once in my life focus in on one set of principles, I think I can do this. And so we just doubled down, and we started engaging with Jocko's company, Echelon Front. And we actually went to a Jocko live session in San Diego in November, and it's a small venue, and we just wanted to see what he was like. So we just shook his hand and listened to him talk. And then it was just 2 years ago, we went to our first, they call it a muster. It's an extreme ownership muster, where they explain all the principles in the book. And that was in March of 22. And just listening to the principles, and one person in particular, JP Donnell, he talks about doing brutal self-assessments about yourself as a leader. And so just sitting there, just recognizing who I was as an individual, and just thinking about leading myself, like everything just started to unravel in my head. Like I just had to be a better leader for myself. I had to be a better leader for myself. I had to be a better leader for my wife, for my family, and for SSLLC. And so we just began this path of just diving into the principles, events, you know, Leif Babin, he's been real instrumental in my growth, as well as a lot of their instructors. We're actually flying to Idaho tomorrow to go visit another company where some of the instructors are going to be presenting at a friends of ours companies. And it's a group of people that have been successful in the worst situations. This book was written to honor Mark Lee, who was the first Navy SEAL that was killed in Ramadi, and to honor the service the sacrifice that he made. Their only concern is impacting those and giving this away. In fact, somebody just asked a question, hey, can I use these principles or share this within this other group? And they're like, share it with whoever you want. Our only main concern is to share these principles with as many people as we can. And we would not be sitting here if it wasn't for reading this book. Him and I wouldn't have the relationship that we have if it wasn't for this book. We have three daughters and two sons. The relationships, everything is based on just becoming a better leader for myself. And, you know, our core value of lead yourself first, it starts with me. And it's funny, I was just mentioning this today in a meeting. There's four cycles that I look at from extreme ownership when you read this book. The first one is, why didn't I read this sooner? You beat yourself up thinking about reading it in the past. The second one is, well, I know a lot of people that can read this book, that need to read this book. And then the third stage, which is really the most important, is finally realizing that it's all about you. It has nothing to do with anybody else. And then finally, the fourth stage, which is really the most impactful, is once you believe in your soul and your heart that it's only about you becoming a better leader, only then you can impact the people around you. And that's really the fourth stage, which is a lifelong commitment of just becoming a better leader yourself. And just in that activity, you begin to impact those around you. And we're seeing it. I mean, we're seeing it with everybody that comes into our company that buys into that book, to those principles. I mean, we hire based on those principles. We have weekly team meetings that talk about those principles. Everything we do is train, provide that support based on those principles.
And that's why I wanted you to share that passion story after we talked about what you've actually done. You know, you've found your why to be a lifelong learner and leader through these principles. And why I wanted you to expand on that, and I'm a huge Jocko fan as well. And what I see over and over again from the Jocko is the little video of good. And it always starts when there's a problem. Good. What you're actually talking is about what Jocko, I think, actually wants us to talk about. The good, it's actually good. I'm good. All these other things make it trivial. Meaning, if you say, I'm not good, I'm effing great from this, right? So, it's so good for construction and the services that they've done, because you kind of have to go out to battle sometimes, but you have to be a Navy SEAL, not just somebody that's blowing up out there. Not everybody's a Navy SEAL in the forces either, right? So I totally felt that when you first said it all started with the book. If you went down this journey of the Jocko and read these books, I definitely believe it. What's your take to that, Junior?
Yeah, I mean, it's why I'm here. You know, like I said at the beginning, you know, I don't have a background in plumbing. You know, I've been put into leadership roles and I've failed in leadership roles. And I read that book and said the same thing. It's, you know, it showed me how complacent that I had started to become with my life, with my career, with everything that I was doing. And it showed me that I really wanted to do more. And you know, the book is just the guideline, but it's up to you to be able to use it. You know, I think for anyone that's never read the book, I'll give you a synopsis. Extreme Ownership, it's all about you, the end. And that's it. You know,
And that is the LinkedIn version of it, right? And that's where I'm hoping I'm going to challenge you guys to come into the Master Facilitators and bring some of your different people that you've really got to as you talked about, stage four, right? Getting to that part where you really want to look yourself in the mirror, right? And we've been going on this journey where we've had Jason Blanker, which was about goal setting, and we talked about my whole platform of how to live a full life perspective. And we're working on having an upcoming one about cash is king and having these conversations, which everybody's heard everything I've said there, but are they living it? That is a whole nother subset, and there's just not that many people that are going to take the time to live it. And we want to surround ourselves around those people who do. And that's what we call a master facilitator.
And it's the consistency. I mean, that's the biggest thing. And I think that's why we've had the success that we've had is from the beginning, August 21, this has been the goal. This has been the message. And every week, every month, every year, we've talked about extreme ownership. And it's just the consistency. This isn't a book that's going to tell you some brand new topic, brand new thing that you've never heard about. Most of the people who are going to read this book are going to realize they're doing a lot of this. It's just, how can you perfect it? How can you be a master of your craft? And how can you focus on yourself? Because a lot of people are like, man, how do I go lead that person? Well, you got to look at yourself first and realize, where are your faults? How can you strengthen yourself? Because it's all about leading by example. You know, everyone always asks Jocko, man, how do I get other people to take ownership? You take ownership. And then it just passes on. Sometimes it may take 7 times for you to take ownership for that one person to realize, this is about me. Like, I can own something of what's going on in my life.
And, you know, we had a guy, when we got hired, we onboard through going through extreme ownership. We share the story of Mark Lee. And at the beginning, he's like, what does this have to do with plumbing? And it's a common occurrence on a weekly basis that I'm getting a phone call or an email or a text from one of our customers telling me about how our guys in the field have taken ownership of a problem and solved that problem, and that it's just very refreshing. Actually, the one guy said, he says, you know, it's really hard to quantify when somebody takes ownership, but I will tell you that this will lead to your success forever by practicing these principles. And this guy's a retired Marine running one of our jobs. And, you know, I saw something once on LinkedIn. They said, what's the worst leadership question or statement you've ever heard? And I thought about it, and I thought the statement of, not everybody's meant to be a leader. My philosophy is, that's not my decision. My decision is to provide the environment where everybody can become a leader. And then obviously it's up to that person to come and take the principles for themselves. We have too many examples within our short time of 21-year-olds to older guys, 32, 35, 50, that are just taking ownership, not only of their jobs, of their families. I mean, my greatest joy is when a wife comes up to me and says, my guy's become a better husband and a better father because of working here. And so we've really taken, you know, obviously we have to be profitable. We have to do those things. But, you know, to what extent, what's our intent? You know, I believe that our intent is, as we focus on the success of our people, other people are starting to recognize it. You know, the Shawns of the world that are starting to recognize the culture that we have and say, man, these guys are who they say they are.
Well, the last questions we always ask is, this is for our builders and affiliates to connect the right construction technologies and products, plumbing in your instance, to the right handshakes. We're big on figuring out how to really take technology to the next level, because it's one of those really challenging things in construction, right, of connecting the field to the office. Junior and then senior, what are your crystal balls for the future with technology and construction?
Yeah, I think for me, how I would say it is, you know, construction is one of those industries where it's kind of been done the same way forever, and that's the way to do it. You know, and I think for me, just the message of just be open and honest with yourself with how technology is advancing in the world that we live in. You know, be open to what could help you in your day to day, and be honest with yourself that you may not know how to do that. So go take a class, go take the time to learn yourself how to do that. Surround yourself with people that want to do it more than you, that are more successful to it. You know, I know with AI and, you know, I know we use ChatGPT a lot, you know, for just simple things like, hey, I'm struggling how to write this email and I need to make it a little bit more professional. It's going to a customer. Can I get some help from a computer to do that? And I know that's helped tremendously. So, you know, you just got to be honest with yourself of where we're going with technology and realize that time is going to keep ticking no matter what you think. You know, it's going to keep advancing. It's going to keep going. So you can either follow the wayside or try to learn yourself and stay up to date with what's going on.
Love it. Senior, same for you.
So my gut when I heard the question, you know, there's Jocko and Leif have a mindset of innovate and adapt. And unless you have a strong culture, people are always going to resist change. They're going to resist new things, new processes, new softwares. And so for me, you know, who knows the technology that will be out there in 5 years, in 10 years. But when you focus on leadership and you focus on building a strong culture where people can be open and honest, we're seeing this firsthand that we invested tremendously in our culture, in leadership. Now, as we start to input processes to make us a better plumber, they believe it. They believe in what they're doing. We've taught them how to be open-minded for themselves. And so they ask questions. They want to learn about it. So when I see technology, the crystal ball is whatever you do from a non-human type idea, you have to follow that with how are you going to lead those people at the same way? Because it'll just become disconnected. And, you know, humanize it.
Yeah, that is such a key thing. As I'm a couple weeks away, we're doing a whole deep dive series with the Construction Progress Coalition, Nathan Woods, where we're going to be at Austin doing podcasts with all of these amazing innovators, right? And what I've been keep going back to them is I keep saying over and over again, we got to meet the people, the businesses, and the municipalities where they are. The technology is only as good as the human part of those things, right? And we have to just be real about that, right? Because there's so many things that are not. And that's why I asked that question on this quest to say, your tech's only as good as your leader. And your leader's only as good as your tech. They all have to come together through the team.
And, you know, just, you know, talking about, you know, as our journey, as we started with EOS, we, from our first meeting, as we started to really focus in on the scorecard and building our matrices and our accountability, we kind of lost the focus of focusing in on our team and our culture. And I felt that. I felt a stress, and I started leaning into that. And so I said, hey, if we're going to do this EOS, I said, we have to bump it up, and we have to be as strong with our culture, because I don't want people to feel that they're just a number or a robot or just a scorecard item.
I appreciate you saying that, because that is part of the hard evolution of, like, you do all this lead-in stuff and you're doing so great, and what you focus on will grow, and the stages of what you focus on, it's tough. You can't do it all.
And, you know, like you said, I mean, delegating, I mean, that's just the huge thing. And our big thing this year is just, I want to have my goal for SSLOC is to have a company that doesn't provide stress to somebody's home life or them personally. So the only way that can happen, we have to teach leadership and lean into those stresses. If something is stressing you out, be humble, ask the questions, and let's work it out. Like, because that's what kills every company, that's what kills every employee, is the amount of stress that they're put on. And it's just having that open culture so that people can talk through those stresses and lean into them.
That's probably your one thing as we're getting to our final punchline, but I want to pass it to Junior and then Senior, you'd close us out here. What is your one thing, Junior, you want to leave our builders and affiliates to think about as they go out there to crush it and grow their business?
Yeah, I think for me, it's take the time to show that you support the team. You know, I think a lot of times we get so caught up in the day-to-day of doing our job. And, you know, we lose track of how our people are being supported, the stresses that they do feel. And when you take the time to take someone out to lunch, or you're just walking the job site and you just ask, hey, how are you doing? You know, you just take the time to show that you care. I mean, it goes a long way for how they do their job, for how they go home, for how they communicate to their family, and how they communicate with other teammates. So,
and I totally agree. But that's a 10-way street too, right? We call them the quarterly 5-5-5s in EOS language of the quarterly check-ins. They're not a yearly annual review. They're a check-in, and they give you a lot of coaching on how to do that. Go up, neutral site, all the things you're talking about. But you have to delegate and elevate on that too. You can't just be the leader as you grow to, you can't go to lunch 40 times every month as you scale the company. So if you're going to get to that scale point, you got to be able to delegate.
And I think our core values help with that a ton. I mean, I think from the get-go, having those defined, having a mission statement defined, you know, as a company, if you're growing, if you're starting over, you know, that's the number one thing you got to be able to do. You know, I know when we started EOS, you know, it changed the whole landscape of how we looked at our company. You know, we realized extreme ownership was a tremendous foundation that we had to start, but we realized that we were lacking a structure, and EOS provided the structure
so well said
for what that sits on top
of. There is no one silver bullet. You don't just do one thing, even though you say it all started with a book, but then you got to make it your own, right? And we call it our customer care wheel, because you got to decide on the triangle. Are you operation? Are you customer focused? Like you can't be perfect at everything. You have to figure out what you're going to hang your hat on. That's what I've been hearing a lot about. What is that one thing, senior, you want to leave us with? And guys, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's awesome. Like, I think this is one of those we can't hear enough, because sometimes you get into the grind, right? And you got to pull yourself out. So thank you for sharing your guys' story. Senior, close us out. What is that one thing you want to leave everybody thinking about?
You know, just to, you know, talk through what he was saying, as you figure out your culture for your team, find the people that believe in your culture, find the customers that align with you. Because my main concern is to protect my team and finding those customers that align with who we are. So the same types of things. Do they take ownership? Do they support their team? Do they communicate? You know, is that job going to be detrimental to our team and what we've built as a company? So it's really figuring out who you want to be as a company, and then finding the people that support that, whether it's outside advisors, people like yourself, people like Sean. Just find those people that have that vision of culture, that really live the life of taking care of others, and it just takes care of itself. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Awesome. Guys, thank you so much for coming and sharing your story.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Devin.